All right, let's open our Bibles tonight to 1 Corinthians 10 once again. Our ushers found a coat brooch, you know, like a lady's coat maybe. I don't know what color. It's gold on the outside. It's got a, I don't know what that is. Some kind of stone in it. Anybody lose one? I guess it's an earring, a brooch. I don't know. Yeah, right. It's your nose ring. I got your nose ring, John. I got your nose ring here. Seriously, is somebody out there looking for it? All right. Vicky, you got the back, but you don't have the front. Is that right? All right, I'll give it to you after the service, okay? All right, I didn't know if it was an earring or what it was, but anyway, we got it. We found it. All right, where are we? 1 Corinthians 10. All right, we have been looking at this principle, and I'm going to finish this up tonight. We'll finish this up tonight, and we'll jump over into the 11th chapter here. The principle that we're looking at is laid down in chapter 8. The question that they were asking, the thing that they were concerned about, and they wrote to the Apostle Paul and asked him his opinion, and you know, he was the founder of their church. And he was an apostle, and so these things were coming up, and they wanted to know, can we eat meat that has been offered to idols? And Paul says in verse 1 of chapter 8, here's the principle. Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. All right, so knowledge makes you proud, it makes you haughty, it makes you arrogant, it makes you snooty. That's his point, all right? But charity, that is something that you can build on. That is more important. Having charity is more important than anything else. So knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. You say, well, what's that have to do with eating meat offered to an idol? Well, the principle is, you know, okay, knowledge, you know that an idol is nothing. That's what Paul says. You know an idol is nothing. It's just a piece of wood. There is no spirit connected to it. There is no deity behind it. It's just a piece of wood, okay? You remember when Elijah took the brazen serpent and smashed it into pieces, and he cried Nehushtan, which means it's just a piece of brass. That's all it was. The 700-year-old relic, and he took it and smashed it to pieces, and they went nuts. How could you do that? We have always had that. Well, that's 700 years old. That's been a centerpiece here in the house of the Lord for centuries. How could you do that? But they were worshiping it. And so Elijah made the point that it's just a piece of brass. And that's the principle that Paul is trying to get them to see. We know, we have knowledge, we understand that an idol is nothing. It's just a rock. It's just a tree. It's just a piece of wood. It's just a something that is carved by the hand of a man. But let your heart guide you. Let charity guide you. And you know that it's not wrong to eat meat that's been offered to an idol, but if meat is going to make your brother offend, then don't eat the meat. Okay? So that's the principle. And then in the 9th chapter, he uses his own apostleship to deal with this issue. I think I mentioned it to you Sunday night, but I have been instead of watching the news when I go home or watching a ball game, because baseball's over now, and I just can't watch a rerun game. But so I've been watching rabbis teach the law, and I know I'm boring, I know, but what a life I've got, right? But I'm fascinated by it. They're absolutely, their insight is amazing. But you just sit there and go, oh, wow, look at that. No, you're wrong. That's wrong, wrong. They always go off on a tangent somewhere because Christ is not in it. If they would just put Christ in it, you know, but they don't believe in the Jesus that we believe in. But their big argument against Christianity is the fact that they blame Paul, the Apostle Paul. They say that Paul is the one who made the believers in the first century Christians and not Jewish. That they took the Judaism away and put a Christian tag on themselves, and they blame Paul for it. They say Paul is the problem, and so they just don't like Paul's writings and all that. Well, here in the ninth chapter, Paul takes his apostleship and he holds it up, and he shows them that God was the one that called him, and that God ordained him, and that they need to listen to what he has to say, but they also need to support his ministry and realize that they're all on the same team and work together and try to win souls to Christ. And he brings that to a conclusion in verse 27 at the end of that ninth chapter. And then in chapter 10, where we have been for the last 2 weeks, the Apostle Paul is now going to illustrate in the beginning of this chapter, he's going to illustrate the principle. And he shows you the children of Israel and all the things that they went through. Here they were, the people chosen of God. They were privileged people. They had the hand of the Lord upon them. If you look at verse chapter 10 and verse 1 and 2 and 3, these people saw the cloud. They saw the pillar of fire. They actually saw it. I can't imagine that. Now, I just every time I think about it, I just feel like taking a step back and letting it all sink in. Can you imagine waking up in the morning and stepping outside of your tent and seeing the Shekinah of God standing in front of you? Could you imagine? Could you imagine looking at the center of your camp, and there is the tabernacle set up, and over that tabernacle is the Shekinah, the glory of God. Just fathom that. And imagine you're standing there, and the Red Sea is in front of you, the mountains on one side, the desert to the other side, the Egyptians coming behind you, mad as hornets, and you're standing there wondering, okay, what do we do? And God tells Moses, take the staff, put it in the water. And Moses did that, and then the water separates, a wall on one side, a wall on the other, and you're standing there watching that. Now, you talk about people of privilege. And yet, Paul says in verse 5 that with many of them, God was not well pleased. And I made the point to you last week that many really means many. All but two. All right? The original ones that came out, they all died in the wilderness except for two. Joshua and Caleb. So why? Well, because they were lusting, verse 6. They were idolaters, verse 7. They were fornicators, verse 8. They were tempting the Lord, verse 9. They were murmuring in verse 10. And that's the illustration that Paul uses to apply to this principle. He is saying, hey, folks, listen, you be careful. If these privileged people, these Jews under Moses, if these privileged people who saw God, they saw, now they did not physically see God. No man has seen God at any time and lived. But they saw the cloud. They saw the handiwork. They saw the pillar of fire by night. They saw that. They saw the water coming out of the rock. They saw the manna on the ground when they woke up in the morning. They saw in the evening the quail fly into their camps and land at their feet so that all they had to do was go bend over, pick them up. These privileged people, if they can fall, you and I better, we better watch our step. And that's his point. That's his point. If these people can fall, you better be careful. Verse 11, now all these things happened unto them for ensamples. The King James translators have a footnote in the Cambridge Bible that says type. All this happened as a type. It is a picture. And they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. So here is what we're supposed to learn. It's for our admonition. So what are we supposed to learn? Well, here it is, verse 12. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now, what's that verse telling you? What's it telling me? I'll tell you what it's saying. Very simply, here's what it's saying. Don't ever get to the place in your Christian life where you say, okay, I've arrived. That's what it's saying. Here's what it's saying. Don't ever get to the place where you wake up one day and say, well, you know, I don't have to read my Bible today. I'm doing pretty good. Don't ever get up and say, well, I don't have to concentrate on God today because, you know, I'm doing pretty good at this Christian life thing. No, if these people who were so privileged could so easily walk away from God and get away from God, then you and I had better be careful lest we fall. So that's what he's saying. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. Now, how many of you's life verse is 1 Corinthians 10:13? How many of you, any of you? You've chosen that? About four? Yeah, several of you have. That's what I figured. It's a great verse. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful. Oh my, what a great verse. What a great statement. God is faithful. You know, we can't say the same thing about ourselves, can we? But God is faithful, who will not suffer you or allow you or permit you. We don't use the word suffer today in our modern English world, but it's a great, great word. It means to permit or to allow. And God will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape that ye may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my beloved, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. All right, now let's tie those two verses together and see what he's saying. Now, I've already taught you last week about this just wonderful verse, and it is just that. But what Paul is saying here is well, it's just probably a little bit more than what you know, we just look at the verse and we say, you know, God is not going to put more of a burden on me than what I can handle. Well, that's true, but there's a little bit more to it than that. All right? Look at verse 14. Wherefore? And I told you last week that when you have a wherefore, you need to see what it's there for. Okay? And it's there in light of what was just said in verse 13. What was just said in verse 13 is a truth that you and I love. We read it. We cherish it. Some of us have made it our life verse. It is such a great truth that God will not suffer us to be tempted above that which we are able. Now watch this last part. You got to get this last part. But will, with the temptation, make a way of escape. All right, now jump down to verse 14. Wherefore, flee from idolatry. All right, so when the trial comes, when the tribulation comes, when the heartache comes, and there you are in the midst of it, carrying this on your back, God says, hey, I'm faithful, and while you're carrying that, I want you to look, because there is a way of escape. And when you see that way of escape, flee to it. Flee to it. Now, what happens if you don't? What happens if you don't is you stay right here with a very good chance that you're going to become an idolater. What's an idolater? An idolater is a person who allows something to come between him or her and God. That's what an idol is, folks. An idol is anything you put before God. It can be a job, it can be children, it can be money, it can be alcohol, it can be drugs. I mean, it can be any number of things that you put before God. And here we are, you know, God says the trial is what makes us strong. God says the trial is where we learn patience. God says the trial is where we grow and where we're benefited and where we're encouraged. And in the trial, he said, listen, when you're there, be careful. Look, because there is a way of escape. There, God's not going to put more on you than what you can handle. God's point is not to crush you under the trial. God's point is to give you an avenue where you can flee to so that you don't stand there and become the victim. Poor old me. How you doing? Oh, mercy, let me tell you. Oh, no, I was just joking. I was just joking. I didn't really mean how are you doing. Be careful. Be careful. Don't make yourself an idol. Can I say it that way? Don't make yourself an idol. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. So there is the admonition and the principle applied to our lives. Flee from the idolatry. Folks, listen, there are moments when the true and courageous thing is not to face it and fight the trial that you're in, but to turn and run away. That's because God has made for you a way of escape. So what's his point? His point is flee from idolatry. Folks, don't let yourself get bogged down. That's the point. Look here. Oh, I'm chasing rabbits now, big time. All right, but Bill. All right, watch. Let me see if I can illustrate this. All right, let me say it this way. We are constantly changing. We're either changing for the good or we're changing for the bad. In every... do you remember when you got about... guys, do you remember when you got about 36, 37, 38 years old? Remember when you got there? Huh? Go back. Come on, Gene. Way back there. Come on. You got about 35, 36 years old, and you got up on January the 1st, and you looked down and you saw one of these. You remember that? And you said, all right, I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to start lifting weights again. So you went down in the basement and you dug the weight set out and you got the cobwebs off of them, killed all the mice, and then you stood down there and you lifted weights, and then the next morning you couldn't move. Remember that? You were so sore you couldn't move. And you vowed, I'll never lift another weight as long as I live. All right, you're always changing. Always. It's the same way with people. It's the same way with marriages. It's the same way with relationships, with friendships. They're always either getting better or it's getting worse. That's just the way life is. That's just the way life is. And folks, listen. Flee idolatry. It gets awful easy the older you get. It gets awful easy as you're going through life to just stop and say, wow, and quit. Oh, I've read the Bible. Well, read it again. Oh, well, I've prayed. Well, pray some more. You know, be careful that you don't stop and become your own idol. You see how true that is? And we can do that. That's what Paul is saying. Now, the next thing he's going to do, look at verse 15. He said, I speak as to wise men, judge ye what I say. Now, that's Paul being the doctor. That's Paul being the doctor of the law. When these Pharisees were PhDs, that doesn't stand for post hole digger, okay? But that means that they were educated. And they were educated in the law and in how to address people and how to talk to people. And you'll notice here, He's throwing in a little flattery. He said, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. Now, I speak to you as wise men. Now, he just knocked him over the head with verse 13 and 14. And so now he's buttering him up a little bit. I speak as to wise men. Judge ye what I say. Now, let's judge what he's about to say. Look at verse 16. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body. For we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel after the flesh. So going back to the Old Testament. Behold, Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then? That the idol is anything? Or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. Why? Well, because verse 21, you cannot drink of the cup of the Lord and drink of the cup of devils. You know, wow. I mean, that's pretty straightforward, isn't it? You cannot drink of the cup of the Lord and drink of the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? That's a rhetorical question. The answer is, well, good grief, no. No, we don't provoke the Lord to jealousy. Are we stronger than He is? No. No, of course not. And so here's the principle again. All things are lawful, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Go back to chapter 8, verse 1. But charity edifieth. So there's your word. All right, so can I eat this meat that's been offered? Yeah, you can. But listen, if your brother over here, he knows that meat is being sacrificed to a false god. He knows that. He paid for that meat to be offered to a false god, and he's your neighbor. And if you go to the meat market out behind his temple and buy that meat and he sees you, then you try to witness to him. And he's going to look at you and say, well, wait a minute. You're eating my God. I don't want anything to do with your religion. You see the point? All right. Let me see. Let's bring it to us. All right. Let's bring it down to where we live. A couple years ago, Karen and I, it was a Saturday. Karen and I were sitting at the house, and it was in the wintertime, and I said, what do you want to eat? She said, I don't know. And I said, well, you know, it's cold. I don't want to go out there. I don't want to go grill anything. I don't want to cook anything. I said, just what do you want? I'll go get it. I'll go get it. And I said, let's get it where I don't have to get out of the car. Huh? Now, here's what we settled on. We settled on Ruby Tuesdays. And she said, I would like to have some barbecued ribs. And I said, ooh, that sounds good. So we called Ruby Tuesdays and ordered barbecue ribs. Well, we drove over there, and it was one of those times where they weren't having the pull-up curbside service. And so I pulled around, and there were no signs there, you know, curbside parking. There were no signs there. And I thought, well, I thought they had where you just pull up and then they come out and they take your credit card and go in and then they bring you your food. And nobody came out. So I thought, oh, man. So I had to get out of the car. So I got out and I walked in and a little girl was standing there. And she said, table for one? I said, no. I called in an order and I'm here to pick it up. And she said, oh, honey, if you'll just go right over there to the bar, they'll get it for you. And I said, nope. And she looked at me and she said, what? And I said, no. And she said, well, what's wrong? And I said, I'm a Christian. I'm the pastor at the Church of the Open Door. I am not going to go over to the bar at Ruby Tuesdays. I've seen too many of my church members sitting at that bar at Ruby Tuesdays. And she just jumped back. She said, well, I'll go get it for you. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. And I handed her my credit card, and she went back, and she brought me a thing. I gave her a $10 tip, and she brought me my food. Now, what if I had, you say, well, but Pastor, what's the big deal? Hey, what if I had been standing over there leaning on that bar and one of you came by? Hey, what if you came by? Don't look at me like that. I know exactly what you'd think, because I would think the same thing about you. Because trust me, I've seen a many of them over there. Oh, yeah. And you know, it's funny, when they see that I saw them, then I don't see them anymore. Funny how that works, isn't it? Funny how that works. Not funny, ha-ha. Funny makes you sick. So Paul says, look, you can't drink of the table of the Lord and drink of the devil's cup at the same time. You just can't do it. So I'm not going to, is there anything wrong with Ruby Tuesday's ribs? No, but I'm not going to be hanging out at Ruby Tuesday's bar. You with me? And they do the same thing at Olive Garden. Olive Garden, you walk in and, could we get you some wine? No, you can't get me wine. No, take these glasses too. I don't want anybody walking by here going, oh, the preacher's drinking wine. No, he's not. I don't drink wine. I drink whiskey. I don't drink wine. No, no, I'm joking. I'm joking. Oh, man, that's going to be clipped out of, erase that. Yeah, CNN tomorrow, yeah. I don't drink, period. Don't want anything to do with it. I'm not connected to it at all. So you cannot drink of the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. All right, now go down to verse 31 and look at this. Whether therefore you eat or you drink or whatsoever you do. Right, man, that's it right there. Just do all for the glory of God. Man, if we'd live our lives that way, oh my. Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church. So in other words, don't give any offense to the outside or to the inside. Don't give offense. Just don't do it. You know, I don't know, maybe, I don't remember which trip it was, but a few trips back to Israel, there was a fella in our group. He was from another city, from another town, and the travel company just stuck him with us. And this guy was not Jewish. He was not Jewish. I mean, you know, I asked him about halfway through the trip. I asked him, and he didn't want to answer me, but he finally did. Actually, Glenn Matthews pressed him until he told us, and then Glenn let him have it. But this guy was dressing like one of the Hasidic Jews on the trip. You know, he was wearing the black pants and the black shoes and the tie belt. No, he didn't do the head thing, but he had the hat thing. Didn't do the hair thing, but he did the hat thing. And he was standing around, to hours of prayer and a prayer shawl and the whole nine yards. It was just nauseating to watch it. You know, this guy, he was putting on a show. And it was offensive to us as Christians. Because we're not Jewish. We don't practice Judaism. We practice Christianity. See, there's a difference. And so he went down to we went to Jerusalem, and he went down to the Wailing Wall. And he got into it with one of the rabbis down there, and one of the rabbis caught his hand on it and embarrassed him. And that's when Glenn and I said something to him. And Glenn told him, stop it. You are offending everybody. You're offending us. You're offending the Jews. You're offending our guide. You're offending our bus driver. Stop it. Stop it. Don't give offense. Wherefore, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do all to the glory of God. And he closes with verse 33. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many. And here's what this is all about. That they may be what?
Saved.
There it is. You see, that's the bottom line. What we're trying to do is get people to heaven. That's what we're trying to do is get people to heaven. So we don't want to do anything that is going to keep people from getting to heaven. We don't want to give them an excuse. We don't want to give them an excuse. Now, we don't compromise, but we don't give them an excuse. Flee from idolatry. All right, so that's the principle. Everybody understand all that? All right, I hope so. It's a great chapter. It's complicated if you don't look at it as an overall thing. All right. So in chapter 11, what he's going to do is he's going to stay on the same idea, just go a little bit different direction. So we will take a look at that next week. All right, let me make sure I didn't miss anything I need to give you, because I quit awful early for some reason. I don't know why I did. I was going to make sure I'm not going to do what? I need to chase another rabbit, yes. I got them running all over the mountain now. All right, all right, I think that's what I wanted you to see. All right, so if you, all right, let me give you another little example here. If you, as a Christian, if you're invited to someone's house to eat, and he distinctly stands and tells you prior to sitting down to eat that the meat that you are about to eat has been offered on an altar to Zeus. All right? And his intent is to make you look like you're compromising your faith, then don't eat that meat. Okay? So, again, we're talking about balance. But now, let's get back to the reality of things. There's nothing wrong with that meat. Okay? Not a thing in the world wrong with it. I mean, it tastes just as good if it's medium rare. It tastes just as good. Amen. Okay? But if your neighbor is going to use that to make you look bad and your Christianity look bad, if he's going to use it to try and get you to compromise and make it appear that you're not 100% devoted to the Lord, that you can eat from the cup of the Lord and from the cup of devils at the same time, you with me? Then Paul said, don't eat any meat. Why? Well, because you're going to impact your witness. And what we're trying to do is do all the glory of God, verse 31, so that folks might get saved, verse 33. That's what we're after, seeing people get saved. So Paul says, whether you eat or whether you drink, do all to the glory of God. All right, I hope that helps you. I hope that helps you. That's, man, I've spent just about all day just thinking, how am I going to relay this, and how am I going to going to make this understandable, and I think the Lord has led and helped me to do that. I hope you got it. It's man, what a great truth it is.